Well, good evening. Delighted that you've come. We have a little bit different situation tonight in that we have a much smaller text displayed on our PowerPoint than I'd planned for. It finally came to me what has happened, but while I was singing the song, so nothing we can do about that right now. So here's what I'd like for you to do. We're going to stand. Everybody come forward, or you will not be able to read the text. It's that small. So please stand, and Carrie's going to turn the side lights off so the contrast is better. So come on down close as you can, and you'll see the text better. Yeah, this is movie night, but no sleeping. I want to talk to you tonight about something that everybody wants, but very few people ever find. Isn't that interesting? That there are some things that everybody wants, but very few people find. And of course, the question is also, well, how is it that some find it, even though they're very few, but most do not? I think you'll see as we work through the lesson. And I want to talk to you about in search of the good life. I want to talk to you about having a good life. You know, after all, how many lives you going to live? One. That's it. You get one in this world. So, makes sense. We got to make the most of it. We want to do the very best that we can do to search for it. Now, before we begin, though, I want to set you up. This lesson only is of value if there's a lot of soul searching going on within each of us. And I can't make all the searches for you, and you can't make them for me. But I was searching within as I was preparing this lesson. Now, if you were asked right now to find the good life for you, what do you have to have, or what do you have to become, or what circumstance do you have to live in your definition of good, to have the good life? I have found that going to funerals is one of the best ways to discover just what you really want out of life. And the way that hits me is this. When I attend funerals or when I perform them, I'll normally, if I'm performing them, I'll sit down with the family and say, well, especially if I didn't know them, say, well, tell me about your loved one and what kind of life did he have or she have? What did they like? What did they do? What really motivated them? And I try to get to know them, even through maybe a third party eyes. Well, let me ask you a question. What would you want people to say at your funeral? If I have to perform your funeral, what do you want me to say? And hopefully I won't perform any of your funerals. I'll go first. Then you got to perform mine. So I'm going to tell you what I want you to be able to say. Without lying, without making it kind of fudging, you know. Sometimes at funerals you like to be helpful to people. You know, and we know often I kind of prefer it if I don't know them too well. If they've really been bad, you know. Just because you want to be honest. You don't want to get up there and prevaricate and just spin a big tale. But what would you want people to be able to say with gusto and with full conviction, this is what their life was about? All right, let's look. In search of the good life. Well, the writer of Ecclesiastes, I told you it was small. For those of you who do PowerPoint, you got to have that font on this machine, and it's not, I don't think. Can't tell you why I used it now, but I thought it looked swift on my machine at home. All right, what advantage does man have in all of his work? That's a funeral ceremony question, isn't it? What's it all been about? Now that we've lived our life and now we're dead, what will people say? Well, this is what it's been about for John. What advantage does man have in all of his work, which he does under the sun? Why are you living? Why am I living? What's the purpose that we are achieving in our life? All of our passages will be from Ecclesiastes. If it's easier for you to read in your text, that'll be fine too. Only one is outside of Ecclesiastes. So let's begin the search. You know, man has always been searching for, if you will, the secret of life, or the real bottom line wisdom of how to live life. You know, if you resurrected 100 scientists of 100 years ago and put them in a room with 100 current scientists, the ancient scientists wouldn't even probably even understand the conversation. It's changed that much. Now the real smart ones, I'm sure they'd catch up maybe. But if you resurrected 100 philosophers and put them in the room with 100 current philosophers, they could join right in, because we got the same questions that man has always had. And that is, one of them, what's life all about? And often it begins by, where did I come from? Who am I? What should I do in life? And where am I going? Those are the eternal questions. And men have always been asking those. Let's advance. Well, what are the world's solutions to these questions? And they propose them. And I wanted to do it in such a way to show us that we often buy into these. We buy into them. Why? We live in a culture that encourages us to buy into it. For instance, this is not in the lesson, but I'm going to throw it in right now, because I had to work through this. You know, I've been single a fairly long time, all my life. Well, on one level, that's not normal. My mother said when I got a cat, well, at least you're a little bit more normal. And I had to work through that dynamic of, well, what's wrong with me? Why haven't I gotten married? Or, you know, what's the deal? And there are similar questions like that circumstances of life, maybe also it's about, often we're in a certain economic group and we say, well, why can't I make a lot of money? A lot of other people are. Why am I always struggling? Or health, you know, why do I have poor health and another person has great health? And they're, you know, they're a reprobate and I'm trying to serve God. It just, we struggle with making sense of that. Well, look what this great wise man, probably Solomon, he's not specifically identified as the writer of Ecclesiastes, but he either wrote it or he is the paradigm that they're using to illustrate it. The Bible says he was the wisest man on earth. When God asked him, did he want riches or wisdom? He said, I'll take wisdom. And God commended him. You've made the right choice. And he gave him unusual wisdom. And isn't it ironic that as far as the historical record is concerned, the wisest man on earth became one of the greatest fools? Ought to be a lesson there somewhere. So we're going to look at that time when he's thinking through all of these questions of the meaning of life, searching for the good life. And he has the means at his disposal to make an absolute complete search. He's got the money, he's got the power, he's got the wisdom. Have you ever thought, I've told you, you know, the 80-20 rule? By surveys, 80% of people think if they just had 20% more material wealth, they'd be happy. What does that testify to? Maybe happiness isn't in that direction. So, let's look at the world solution. First one is education. Oh, education, education, education. Now, kids, you can stop your ears for a little bit. You'll miss the point altogether. But I'll resurrect it, parents, here in a little bit. There's another passage that shows the place of education. But, you know, that's what you hear all the time. Every social problem that the politicians pick up, sooner or later, somebody's going to say what? We got to educate people. Well, of course we do. But is that solution to happiness? Just be well educated. Well, let's see. Let's see what the wisest man on earth, directed by the search for the good life and by God himself, said about wisdom or education. I'm using education just to represent wisdom, learning, sagacity, the ability to look deeply into a subject and understand it. So, see what he said. When I gave my heart to know wisdom and to see the task which has been done on the earth, even though one should never sleep day or night. In other words, it's a daunting task. Even though one should never sleep day or night, if I gave myself to it 24/7, and I saw every work of God, I concluded that man cannot discover the work which has been done under the sun. Even though man should seek laboriously, he will not discover. And though the wise man should say, I know, he cannot discover. So this wise man, see, I don't care if you're the wisest man on earth, by your own ability, without divine intervention, without God's help, life under the sun means that in this book, you won't discover the good life. Now, do we understand why everybody wants a good life, but so few find it? Why? They're not looking in the right places. But the world says, look in education. You just need to be smarter. Well, look what he also said in this regard. I said to myself, behold, I have magnified and increased wisdom more than all who were over Jerusalem before me, and my mind has observed a wealth of wisdom and knowledge. And I set my mind to know wisdom and to know madness and folly, and I realized that this also is striving after wind. His point is, there's hardly any difference between folly and wisdom as far as learning what the good life is. Because in much wisdom, there is much grief, and increasing knowledge results in increasing pain. Oh, I know you can just see a kid who doesn't want to go to school memorizing that, those last two lines. But that's so. The more you understand about life and know it, the more anomalies you find, the more inequities you find, the more opportunities for grief. And folks, those are the facts. So you can make an argument that ignorance, we say, ignorance is what? Bliss. That's the opposite. Just better be ignorant. Another one on education. And I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. So we've rescued it a little bit. He's not saying that folly is the way to go. Yes, wisdom does excel folly, but it simply will not of its own power yield the good life. I don't care if you got a PhD from Harvard, Yale, Stanford, Princeton, University of Chicago, whatever else, University of Texas A&M, University of Texas, Florida College, I don't care, wherever. Education of and within itself will not yield the good life. Well, you say, preacher, no, I understand it's not education. Education is just the means to get the job so that I can have the good life, right? There's some wisdom there, isn't there? I tell the kids I'm helping go to school, I say, now look, good grades are going to help you get that first job. They'll help you. Now the second job is usually going to go on the recommendations that you built up in the first job. That's what I'm telling them. But here's what I'm not telling them. If you get that job, you're going to have the good life. Because I don't believe that. Yes, one needs to work. The Bible teaches that we need to work. We need to teach the honor of work. But you know one thing I found in the garbage hauling business? My mother never was real proud that her son was in the garbage hauling business. And she made no bones about it. My mother could not, I think she lacked the ability to be guileless in any form. I mean, you just knew her opinions on everything, whether you wanted them or not. But I'll tell you one thing the garbage haulers business taught me. If it's honorable work, it's worth doing. And it didn't bother me to pick up trash. I'm glad I didn't have to pick it up myself, just because I didn't want to do manual labor. I wanted to sit in the cool office and, you know, direct and route the trucks and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But I would have done it. I did do it on a few occasions. Thank you. He's right. He's exactly right. That was an amen from him. You didn't hear it, but I did. All right, so let's see now. Let's go from education. Now we got the good job and we got money and we're going to be an empire builder now. We're going to build our career. Physical pleasures, we can buy them. We now can afford them. That's where the good life. We can have the big house. If not now, we'll have it in 10 years or 20 years or whenever it is, and we'll have the nice cars and we'll have the nice clothes. We're going to have the things that we always wanted, and we'll have the good life. Well, Solomon tested all that, and this is what he said. I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure. So enjoy yourself. And behold, it too was futility. A set of laughter, it is madness. And of pleasure, what does it accomplish? I explored with my mind how to stimulate my body with wine while my mind was guiding me wisely. And how to take hold of folly until I could see what good there is for the sons of men to do under heaven the few years of their lives. Did you notice here he said, I was careful not to become an addict. I wasn't a drunk. I kept in touch with my faculties at all time as I was enjoying this pleasure because I really wanted to see it for what it really was. I didn't find the good life in that. It wasn't there. You know, if you listen to some of these programs, they'll convince you that the good life is in some type of cuisine, some type of food, or it's being a connoisseur of good wines, and it's being a connoisseur of fashion, and whatever it is, that's the good life. If the people who've got the money who can afford that lifestyle, they're admired, they're put in magazines, and we see their beautiful houses and their tours, they get on the tours that the city runs into the beautiful homes, etc. And folks, if we're not careful, we're going to buy into that. And we're going to be, and we'll miss the good life that God has prepared for us. More. But you say, it isn't just the physical pleasures that's the good life. It's doing something with your life. It isn't just hiring out to Shell Oil or XYZ Corporation or the Sanitas Garbage Hauling Company or whatever some of the companies I work with. It isn't just getting a good job. It's being able to be a mover and a shaker. I mean, it's great projects. Be an empire builder. See what he did there. So, the next is great projects. And there are a lot of people who think of their life's work in a great project. One of the values, one of the things that I enjoyed very much going to family reunion, several of the cousins have pulled together a lot of archives and artifacts from earlier generations, and one of my cousins, her father had saved this. They were the notes that my grandfather used to give a dedication speech when the church he was going to built their new building. And I thought, I'm glad I knew him. I'm glad I knew him. He had some good values. And even though, in my humble opinion, they emphasized too much the building itself, what he said was, if you really want to invest your life in the grand project, invested in the kingdom of God. That's what's eternal. That's what's going to last. Well, let's see. See what Solomon said about these great projects. I enlarged my works, tore down my old barns and built bigger ones. We're going for a billionaire now. I built houses for myself, not just a house, but houses. One of our cousins was telling us they were going to get them a condo on the mainland. Not give up their home on the island, but so they'd have a place in the city. They can go both places. Well, they apparently have the money to do that. I don't begrudge them for doing that. But what if you could do that? I one time thought when I was a young man, what I think I'll do is try to cultivate working with a church up in Wyoming or someplace in the summer, and then coming back here and working with y'all in the winter. That never worked out. I made gardens. Oh, my mother would have loved that. I made gardens and parks for myself. Just beautiful. Be able to sit out there and enjoy it. It's beautiful landscaping. parks for myself, and I planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made ponds of water for myself from which to irrigate a forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves. Boy, I had servants everywhere. Slaves, and I had homeborn slaves. Also, I possessed flocks and herds larger than all who preceded me at Jerusalem. Also, I collected for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. I provided for myself male and female singers. Don't need to get a CD, just get it live right there. And the pleasures of men, many concubines, instant sexual gratification. To the world, that sounds like paradise. To a Muslim, that's paradise. That's one of the things wrong with it. It's one of the things they teach about going to paradise. But he continues, then I became great, increased more than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. My wisdom also stood by me. I didn't lose my wisdom. I didn't become a fool yet. All that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart was pleased because of all my labor, and this was my reward for all my labor. Thus I considered all my activities which my hands had done and the labor which I had exerted, and behold, all was vanity, meaning futile. It was worthless. And striving after wind, and there was no profit under the sun. It's what I found. I didn't find the good life. It wasn't there. So I turned to consider wisdom, madness, and folly. For what will the man do who will come after the king except what has already been done? Anytime you think that what you're doing is so unique, go read this passage. Other people have done it, and other people will do it after you're gone. And I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. And yet I know that one fate befalls them both. The fool and the wise man are both going to die. It's so, just from an earthly standpoint, what's the difference? They're both going to have a funeral. If that's all they've got, so what? They're gone. Then I said to myself, as the fate of the fool, it will also befall me. Why then have I been extremely wise? So I said to myself, this too is vanity. For there is no lasting remembrance of the wise man as with the fool, inasmuch as in the coming days all will be forgotten. And how the wise man and the fool alike die. So I hated life, for the work which had been done under the sun was grievous to me because everything is futility in striving after wind. Can you see that this wise man is working himself into a state where he is going to be very, very pessimistic? Which leads us to our last world solution that we'll consider. Just be a pessimist. It's pessimism. Or the philosophical name for it is nihilism. Everything's meaningless. And we're living in a culture where you've got people going for the pleasure and the grand projects and all the things that we've listed there, the education, the physical pleasures, the great projects. And others are saying, There is no meaning to life. Have you ever wondered why some of our deepest thinkers, not all of course, but many, either became, well, sometimes both, became very pessimistic about life, and many of them take their own lives? Because life doesn't mean anything. So let's look at pessimism. This is my take on Ecclesiastes 3. I know that this is not commonly done, but it's what I see in it. He's saying there is an appointed time for everything, and there is a time for every event under heaven. That's the way it seems. So let's see who can make sense of it. A time to give birth, a time to die. A time to plant, a time to uproot what is planted, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to tear down, a time to build up, a time to weep, a time to laugh, a time to mourn, and a time to dance, a time to throw stones, a time to gather stones, a time to embrace, a time to shun embracing, a time to search, and a time to give up as lost, a time to keep, and a time to throw away. Those things we know are facts. That's the way the life is. A time to tear apart, a time to sew together. Time to be silent, time to speak, a time to love, time to hate, a time for war, and a time for peace. Now this is my commentary. So what's the meaning of it then? What's the sense of the life? And the answer comes back, who knows? This one thing, then the opposite thing, then one thing, then the opposite thing, then this thing. And you know it's all there and it's factual and we see it and we experience it. But where? How do we make sense of it? The next verse. What profit, therefore what profit is there to the worker from that in which he toils? And I think the implied, it's a rhetorical question. Not much, if anything. I have seen the task which God has given the sons of men with which to occupy themselves, and it makes no sense to me. But and if this next verse is either a very real kernel and seed of hope, or it is another thorn or burr under our saddle. He has made everything appropriate in its time, even though I don't see how it is appropriate. He has also set eternity in their heart. Well, that's a good thing. So in other words, life cannot be fully understood just here. We've got to factor in eternity. Yet so that man will not find out the work which God has done from the beginning even to the end. And even though he places within our hearts this yearning for eternity when we can make sense of this life, he's hidden it from us. So we can understand pessimism. Then I looked again at all the acts of oppression which were being done under the sun, and behold, I saw the tears of the oppressed, and that they had no one to comfort them, and on the side of their oppressors was power, but they had no one to comfort them. That's reality. So I congratulated the dead, who are already dead, more than the living who are still living. But better off than both of them is the one who has never existed, who has never seen the evil activity that is done under the sun. If you ever talked with a couple who purposely and consciously tell you they do not want children, And if you ask them why, they will say, I don't want to bring a child into this painful world. Now, I think that's a short-sighted view, but I can understand it. There's a lot of reality there. There are no guarantees that the life we bring this, the world that we bring this child into, is going to be very good for them from just absence of pain. Well, what are God's solutions? Those are the world's. Education. Nah. Helpful. But it will not yield a real knowledge of the good life. Pleasure. No. Be a great builder. Great works. No. Pessimism. See what God says. First, God says, be quiet. And I am impressed that looking for what God says is the approach to the good life in the book of Ecclesiastes. Very few compared to all the other things that Solomon tried. I found this one. Be quiet. Look at this. Guard your steps as you go to the house of God and draw near to listen rather than to offer the sacrifice of fools, for they do not know they are doing evil. Do not be hasty in word or impulsive in thought to bring up a matter in the presence of God. For God is in heaven and you are on the earth. Therefore, let your words be few. We live in a non-authoritarian culture and age, more so than in previous years, where dialogue and conversation have been elevated to a degree unknown, really, in the history of man, just by the evolving culture that we have. We're not as big anymore of bringing in some authoritative figure who knows something about a subject than just being quiet and listening. We prize more dialogue where, if you don't believe me, get on talk radio. Listen to that. See the wisdom you can, all the people who call in. Or, even more, get on Facebook. See how much wisdom you find there in the conversations that are going on. God says, I'm not subjecting my ideas to Facebook critique. I'm saying, be quiet and learn to listen. Learn to listen to God. That you're going to be able to achieve the good life if you start with being quiet, meaning listening, being a good listener. Further, understand life at its worst. Be willing to look at life at its worst. Don't shield your children from it. Let them know what the reality of this world is. Look what Solomon said. If you see oppression of the poor and denial of justice and righteousness in the province, which you will if you look, do not be shocked at the sight, for one official watches over another official, and there are higher officials over them, and there is ultimately an official over everybody. So what's the point? The good life can be achieved knowing there's an ultimate arbiter who will right all wrongs and reward all righteousness. It's out of our hands. I'll never forget The first time I became really impressed with that principle of how to live that way, we had a domestic worker in our home growing up. Her name was Minnie Johnson. Minnie was a member of our family. She could barely read and write. My mother looked after her. Well, she looked after my mother and our whole family with domestic chores around our house. But my mother and she became close friends, and my mother looked after her. And she had a lot of pain and sorrow in her life. Her own children would gyp her and steal from her and treat her bad. And business people would take advantage of her because she wasn't that educated. I mean, she was a hard worker and was frugal and saved her money and wanted to have a clean place to live. And I'll never forget my mother. She wanted to fix up her little house. And my mother and we'd go down to her little house, and the boards were rotting and the wallpaper was peeling and everything. And so my mother was helping her, and they're going to fix this house up. And she got her a contractor, and they worked on it, and et cetera, et cetera. Well, the contractor cheated her some way. And Minnie told me this story. My mother never did. And Minnie said, "You know, Mr. John M., Miss Jacqueline took me into Houston to see that man. Said I was scared. But Miss Jacqueline wasn't scared. And she went in and told that man what he was going to do, how he was going to make it right, and he did." I'm proud of my mother for that. I just love that. I'm glad Minnie told me. But my major point about Minnie was, on so many occasions when she was going through those, she lost a son that got murdered with a butcher knife while he slept. And I could go on and on with all the trouble she went through. And I'd be commiserating with her. She said, "Oh, Mr. John M. said, it'll be all right. God will take care of that." It's how we're going to have to deal with a lot of the inequities in this world for the good life. The good life is being able to deal with the worst of life. You got to be able to face it. And you face it by knowing that God is the ultimate righteous judge. And then put God on his throne and enjoy your life. Let the good times roll. But put God on his throne first. And that means the throne of your heart. He comes first in everything. There is nothing better for a man than to eat and drink and tell himself that his labor is good. This also I have seen, that it is from the hand of God. For who can eat and who can have enjoyment without him? Now, you know why 80% of people think that if they just had 20% more, they'd be happy? Because they don't have God on the throne of their heart. If you've got God on the throne of your heart, you can have 20% less, still be happy. You can lose your job, and you can still have the good life because your trust is in God. What did Paul say? "I can do all things through him who strengthens me." Now that is being empowered to enjoy life. Put God on his throne, then let the good times roll. Appreciate them. I'll never forget Brother Haley telling me, he was during the Depression, and he was out there preaching in these little that back in those days, the preacher boys from the colleges could go and preach all summer because most of the rural churches didn't have preachers. So they were welcoming, you know, they were tired of Brother So-and-so, little homily that he had used two or three times, and, you know, that's all they had. So preacher boy comes by, boy, they want to hear him. So he would preach all summer out there in little churches in Arizona. And he was in one place. He was preaching for a little church for the summer, and he was married, and he and Mary Lois, no, that's not right. Lois. Yeah, Mary Lois was the daughter. He and Lois sat down. They had a little baby. Sat down for supper, and they were down to their last can of beans. That's all they had. So she heated it up or whatever and poured it out to this one can of beans. That was going to be supper. And he said they bowed their heads and he gave thanks for the can of beans, and they got tickled and started laughing. You know, if you can thank God that you've got one can of beans, how can the good life ever be denied you? Thank you, Lord. Here's what I've seen to be good and fitting: to eat, to drink, and enjoy oneself in all one's labor in which he toils under the sun during the few years of his life which God has given him, for this is his reward. Receiving life as a gift from God, living it to the honor and glory of God, that's the good life. Furthermore, as for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth, he has also empowered him to eat from them and to receive his reward and rejoice in his labor. This is the gift of God. If God has given us the means to have a meal and has also given us the health to enjoy it, let's give God the glory. I want you to remember that tonight when you eat your supper. Thank God for it. Enjoy it. For he will not often consider the years of his life. In other words, your life is going to pass away quickly. You're going to be enjoying it because God keeps him occupied with the gladness of his heart. Doesn't it seem that the days on which you're joyful and enjoying what you're doing and grateful, doesn't it seem often that those days go by quicker than the ones you're dealing with sorrow and with regret and with guilt, with envy? They do. Put God on his throne and let the good times roll. Brethren, we're struggling with that. We've got our brethren in this church, in my opinion, as little I know or as much as I know of their life, they're struggling with that. Not that they don't have, but they don't see it as the good life given of God. And therefore, let God, let him rule in my life, in all that I do and say. But that's what this wise man concluded. But seek first, this is our one New Testament passage, but seek first what? His kingdom. And his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. These things are the material things that God knows that we need. So do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will care for itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. I don't know about your life. Well, I do. my life is busy, but he can't compare to some of your lives with children, how busy you are. But I know how I get through a busy day. I have to focus on one thing at a time. Today was getting through this sermon. Then in the morning, I got to pick it up. I got three more things I got to do. But I didn't work on those things today. One thing at a time. Conclusion. The conclusion when all has been heard is fear God. Fear him. People say, well, that means respect him. It does. But it also keep alive that sense of knowing his wrath too. Fear God so that you never have to experience his wrath. Fear God and keep his commandments because this applies to every person. For God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. Thanks for listening. It's Search of the Good Life. That's how to have it. If you'd like to have it, please come. Pardon me. Peace come as we stand and sing.